Hey, welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today. I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And she is the Garden Gal. And our program today is Good Growing with the Garden Gal. Our third segment here, we're going to be talking about the crop of the month, and that is onions. But Jelaine, you had a question about our last segment that you wanted to ask.
Well, we were talking about seeds. You know, we talked about the hybrid, open pollinated, heirloom. And then we hear a lot about GMO. And so I thought, well, maybe, you know, we should just make sure everybody understands, you know, are they going to be buying GMO seeds? Because there's a big controversy about GMO. And so you want to tell us what is GMO?
Okay, sure. First of all, genetically modified organisms or engineered organisms, that means that they've had their DNA, their chromosomes, changed in some way by human beings through a process that the plant can't do by itself.
So that's different than hybrid.
Very different than hybrid, because a plant by itself, you know, male pollen goes onto the female flower, produces a seed. This is a process that doesn't involve pollination. It's where chromosomes are inserted into the plant by human beings, and they're chromosomes from another organism. Because if they wanted to do just a different variety of corn, they would use the usual hybridization techniques. Mm-hmm. This is to get a trait that would not occur naturally into a plant.
And a lot of times, and I'm going to just mention Monsanto. I know you can't say anything. I'm going to mention it. They genetically modify these seeds so that they can be sprayed with Roundup, and it's not going to affect them, but it's going to affect everything else around them. And so that's what you're talking about when we're talking about genetically modifying that seed. It has to be amazing from a chemical standpoint and a science standpoint about how they do these different things.
It is, yeah.
And have you ever went into any of those different factories or maybe even down to Michigan State or other places like that and looked at how they do that?
I've not had that opportunity.
Oh, it just seemed to me like it would be fascinating.
The technology is really fascinating that they can do that.
You know, and this is just my understanding. One reason, you know, because there is this big controversy about GMO, but and you had said earlier about yield. This is one reason we have some GMO, because then they can have bigger yields on crops.
That might, maybe not.
One reason.
The traits that they have, let's just talk about corn for a minute. Two of the most common traits that they genetically engineer is resistance to a herbicide. And the other one is inserting a bacteria called Bacillus thuringiensis that gives the crop protection from some of the insects like corn rootworm. And those are the two traits that they have been genetically engineered for, is to insert that bacteria for the worms, and then so they don't die if they're sprayed by a particular herbicide.
Wow. And so, but we don't have to worry about any of that when we're talking about buying tomato seeds or carrot seeds or anything
corn,
like that.
Or corn.
Even sweet corn. Yeah. But yeah, because it's not available to gardeners if that technology is patented. And so if a farmer wanted to grow that, they sign a contract with the seed company about, you know, that they won't try and resell the seed on their own, among other things. So as a gardener, when you go to buy seeds, you're not signing a contract, so you don't have to worry about GMO seeds. They're just simply not available to gardeners.
Teresa, over where I used to live in McBain, I mean, you have a big dairy industry over there. You have a lot of corn growing every place. Okay, if I've got my garden with my corn that is non-GMO and, you know, those other things, and over here, you know, 20 yards away from my garden, there's this huge 300 acres of corn. Can the pollination affect my corn?
Yes.
It can.
Usually that's going to be field corn, and I'm guessing as a gardener you're growing sweet corn.
Correct.
Which is different.
Uh-huh.
And what would happen, sweet corn is, particularly sweet corn, has very specific pollination requirements once you get into some of the super sweet varieties. And if, for instance, say you like those super sweet varieties, they have to be isolated from all other corn in order to produce the super sweet corn that you want to eat. So it's an issue, you know, even taking GMO aside, with corn pollination, because it's pollinated by the wind, it can cross-pollinate very readily. So if you're growing sweet corn and say you want to grow two different varieties of sweet corn, just you yourself, if one of them is a super sweet variety, you need to make sure that the other variety doesn't cross with it. And you can do that by maybe planting them 2 weeks apart, so you harvest them at different times. That's probably the easiest way, rather than trying to separate them by distance, because that can be a lot harder.
Teresa, does any of those herbicides in, I don't care if it's Monsanto, Roundup, or just stuff that the everyday gardener puts on, you know, their garden if they're using herbicides, how do those herbicides affect the insect population, especially bees?
Usually herbicides have no effect on insects.
Okay.
Because their mode of action is related to something that the plant does that wouldn't affect an insect. So it's incredibly rare that an herbicide would affect an insect.
What things do affect insects?
Insecticides. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And are most insecticides one-stop shopping where they're going to affect them, you know, all kinds of insects? Or is it just specifically for one or a particular type or branch of insect?
There's lots of different classes of insecticides that have different modes of actions. Some are what we call broad spectrum, where they would affect a wide range of insects. Some are not broad spectrum. They're very targeted. So it depends, is the short answer.
It'd be interesting to get a beekeeper in here and talk to them about that with you here.
Yeah,
because
that's a great idea.
And, you know, just to sit there and, you know, kind of bounce things back and forth to see from their perspective, because it seems like they have all kinds of problems with those bees anymore, let alone wasps and other things like that, you know, getting into those, and then the mites, and then this, that, and whatever else that's out there. I don't know, but it just seemed, I saw there the other day that there was a couple of kids that had vandalized a whole bunch of those beehives.
Aww.
And just had knocked them all over and different things like that. And boy, did the judge throw the book at those kids. I mean, it was it surprised me how much he sentenced them to, and then community service and a fine and, you know, repaying the beekeeper and the other things. But anyway, let's segue out of that.
We're going to onions.
Going to onions. Onions can be grown from seeds and sets. Many bulbs are plants. Most of the time, our family always purchased the bulbs in the spring, and we planted them. But you're telling us that there's another opportunity that you can grow these ahead of time.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways. I like to grow my onions from seeds. And I've also bought onion plants. In other words, they're not the hard, round little bulbs. They have the green growing plants. And I like the seeds because I can get a much wider range of variety selection by choosing seeds rather than... Usually there's not as many varieties to choose from if you're buying sets or plants.
How long typically does it take to grow an onion?
A lot of onions are listed as being 100 days. And that's 100 days from transplanting. And I'll say that most varieties, when they say how many days it is, it's either from when you put the seed in ground, if you direct sow it like corn, or for plants that you usually transplant, like tomatoes, like onion, it's from the date that you transplant it out into the ground. And so for an onion plant, if I start an onion in mid-February, which is when I usually do, I can expect to harvest those onions in August at full size. Now, you can always harvest them as green onions when they're much smaller, but if you're looking for a full-size bulb onion, it's quite a few months. It's from mid-February to early August for us.
What's the name of the onions that come from Georgia?
Vidalias, maybe?
Vidalias.
Okay.
Do those grow well up here at all?
They're a type of onion. They're the big white sweet onions. And yes, you can grow Vidalias up here. You can also grow Walla Wallas, which are similar. There's lots of varieties. You know, they've made a real name from themselves, done excellent marketing because you thought, that onion from Georgia. But that onion from Georgia is really just a big sweet white onions. And there's lots of big sweet white onions, and not just Vidalia.
I thought years ago that there was one of the service clubs. I can't remember nationwide if it was like the Lions Club or the Rotary or one of the service clubs actually sold bags of Vidalia onions. And they used that as a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to, like, sometimes I think Northview School still does that. They sell grapefruit and oranges and other things like that, and you get them basically from the grower, you know, within a couple of days. It's right up here and, you know, ready for you to pick up. And it was kind of the same way with these onions. I mean, they would come in by the semi-truck load. And these guys, in some cases, I remember they'd be out right in the middle of the street at a stoplight selling these Vidalia onions in these small towns. It's amazing, a 5-pound or a 10-pound bag of them. But they just taste so good.
They're sweet onions because there's the variety. I don't know if all red onions, but I don't like red onions. To me, they're a little too hot.
Oh.
But I like the Vidalia, like you said, sweet. Uh-huh. Sweet onions.
Yeah, there's lots of variety. There's if we're talking about bulb onions, there's three really common types that we know, and one is the big sweet whites, the other is the red, and the other is what we call the storage onion. And you were mentioning that the red tasted a little sharp to you,
mm-hmm.
and onions that taste a little sharp, that's because of the sulfur that's in the onions, and that sulfur is what helps the onions keep long. So so our big sweet white onions. They're not good storage onions. You're not going to be able to keep those for a long time. But the red onions that you mentioned were kind of sharp or are storage onions, also sharp onions, the ones that make you cry when you cut them. It's that sulfur, and it's that sulfur that enables them to be stored for a long time and still be good.
What about yellow onions?
You can have a sweet yellow or a storage yellow. So the color isn't as indicative as that. Most of your big sweets are white rather than yellow, but there are some like Walla Walla that are yellow.
What type of onions do you usually use in canning, like if you're making tomato sauce or chili or, you know, soups or other things like that?
I've never canned onions, but if you think about what you're trying to do with that onion and impart a flavor, I would go with the sharper onions, the ones that are good storage onions, because they're going to have a stronger flavor. Those big, mild, sweet onions are really good for eating raw. If you were to cook them, you wouldn't find a whole lot of flavor in them. So if it's a cooked thing, I would go with one that's more considered to be a storage onion to get that flavor.
How about pickles, when they make bread and butter pickles and other things like that, they have onions in them?
It's a good question. Right. And if I were thinking about myself, I would go with a, because I like a milder flavor, I would try a sweet onion. But it, just so your listeners know, onions don't have enough acidity to safely can on themselves. You're going to have to that vinegar or the pressure canning. But
if you're doing like sauces where you're putting the tomato and the onion in.
You get the acidic with the tomatoes,
yeah,
right?
It's okay then.
A lot of tomato varieties now are being bred for being a low acid tomato.
Oh.
So even with tomatoes, they're recommending be careful, check your pH, make sure you've got an adequate pH so you don't get any problems with food poisoning.
My introduction to onions in the garden, my dad used to, when we grew different things in the garden, he would always get those bigger onions. He would come in, and my nickname was Gigi. My name is George Gershom, so they always called me Gigi. And he would cut probably at least a half inch thick of onion, and he would take two pieces of bread. He'd put mayonnaise on one side of the bread, peanut butter on the other slice of bread, put the onion in between, and that's what he... And I've told that to people, and I've been just unbelievably... So many other people, their dads and their grandpas did the same exact thing. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Mayonnaise, peanut butter, and onions. And some of them said, oh, no, we always use mayonnaise and onions. And others said, we use peanut butter and onions. And I'm like, what about you, Teresa?
I think that's an acquired taste. No, I've never had it.
Well, George, did you ever eat any?
I tried it, and I didn't really like it. But I want you to know, and I was telling Joy, my wife, here just the other day, she had gotten an onion or a couple of onions from the supermarket, and they were just the most tasty, sweet onions, I think. I could have just ate the onion like an apple. It was just so tasty. I never had tasted an onion like that before. And I don't even know what kind it was. Probably the ones you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But it was just a beautiful onion, and I think we had had it on... We made some oatmeal burgers and I like big, thick things of onion on it, but I just love it. Onion, they're really a wonderful, and it's considered a vegetable.
Yes.
It's considered a vegetable. Mm-hmm. And you can use them in so many different ways. And you can use them in savory foods. You can use them in salads. You could use those, I think, well, of course, pizza and different sauces and other things like that. And so,
well, but you can cook
onion
you can
soup.
Soup.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, you can have them raw. You can have them cooked.
And like you said, there's so many different flavors. There's really hot. You know, like you said, those are the ones that make you cry. But it's because of the sulfur. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the longer you leave those in the ground, like through the winter, is the sulfur going to come out of them, and is it going to be a sweeter onion?
I don't leave onions in the excuse me. I don't leave onions in the ground over winter because
they get
really
mushy.
Cold temp. Yeah, so I harvest them and keep them in a big
so not like
of
carrots.
Root cell. No, not like carrots. They can't take cold the way carrots can.
Okay, and so you need to put them in a root cellar or something like that.
Right.
That's dry and cool. Is basically what you're talking about there.
A little side note about onions: the deer won't eat your onions.
They won't. No.
So if you want to make sure you got a good garden and grow onions.
Now, is there any special way that onions really like to be planted? Do they like to be planted in a row? Or can you put them in raised bed gardens? Or can you plant them in a flower pot? Or it doesn't care?
Any of those will work. You know. But one thing you do have to pay attention to with onions, and very few of our other crops have this, is there are varieties that you have to look at the bulbing reflex on that variety of onions. Some onions are triggered by long daylight hours. They're called long day onions, and they're suitable for growing in the north. Some are called short day varieties, and it's shorter days that trigger the bulbing reflex for them. So if you're growing onions, yeah, so you have to pay attention to where are you. We're at about just shy of 45 degrees latitude here, and we're in the area for short day onions. People in Florida, South Georgia, they're in short day onion territory. So if you're in the north or in the south, you have to pay attention to, in the north, you want a long day variety. In the south, you want a short day variety.
So seed catalog people, you want to keep that in mind.
Right.
Or
mm-hmm.
when you go and buy your bulbs this spring, you want to keep that in mind. That's another one of those determinate and non-determinate situations there. All right, Teresa, next month, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about setting up an indoor area to start your seedlings and learning more about, well, what does the term organic really mean? And our crop of the month next month will be maple syrup.
That's exciting. I think every kid, once they go out and have any semblance of collecting maple syrup, the sap from the trees or whatever that it is, they just kind of get hooked. And have you guys done that up by your house?
Yeah, we've made maple syrup.
Have you?
Yeah.
And I know we had too, and the kids and the grandkids just love doing that. And it's really something you have to be patient with, because sometimes you get all kinds of sap and you're just cooking that sap down 24/7, and other times it comes just slower than molasses. So you never know what's going to happen. Teresa, thanks so much for stopping by today. I really enjoyed
pleasure.
That. And I'm George Corliss.
I'm Jelaine Fenner.
And I'm Teresa Williams.
And how can they get in touch with you, Teresa?
The Wexford Conservation District has a website where you can see all kinds of things that we're doing. And it's just wexfordconservationdistrict.org. And they can also give us a call. And our phone number is area code 231-775-7681, extension 3.
Thanks, Teresa. Hey, folks, we'll be back next month with Good Growing with the Garden Gal. And thanks so much for tuning in. You have a great day.
Bye, folks.